Chapter 15. I commanded my pyreworm to hover as I contemplated my next move, and I tried not to let fear get the best of me in the meantime. As much as I'd been ready to battle the herd on my own, I knew now I couldn't take them on alone. So I tightened my grip on the pyreworm and braced myself for a bumpy ride, and the eyeless monster inclined its serpentine head to me and sent a wave through our bond as if it were questioning what to do. "Fly as fast as you can," I commanded. "We need to get to Varlay as soon as possible." Without any hesitation, the pyreworm menacingly flexed its talons and took off into the dust-filled air. As we sped forward, the clamoring sounds of the monsters increased, and the different growls muddled together and unnerved me deeply. Headmaster Sleet and Grand Mage Kennefic weren't even remotely prepared for this attack, and despite my warnings, they wouldn't be expecting a horde of monsters at their doorstep anytime soon. After all, the last they'd heard, the creatures were spotted grazing in a field in Adorna, not en route toward Varlay. I hoped they'd at least communicated with the military about the threat these creatures posed once I left. But either way, there was no time to lose. I needed to get to the Enclave as fast as I possibly could and warn the others. As the distance between us and the herd grew shorter, I recognized a couple of the monsters from our first glimpse in the field, namely the skinless thing with six legs. It ran like a frenzied insect, and was entirely disjointed and frantic as it ambled about, and I had to remove my eyes from its blood-slicked body to keep from retching. It was a vile creature, something I couldn't have imagined in my nightmares even if I tried, and disgust surged through me. The Shadowscape was home to many terrifying monsters, and while I'd seen plenty in my time and studied countless others in my classes, it chilled me to realize there were still so many more I didn't know about. Then, as if it knew I was thinking of it, the skinless monster halted in its tracks and turned around to face me. The rest of the herd continued forward, but the many-legged creature remained frozen and stared straight at me. Fuck! Much like the pyreworm, this creature appeared to be eyeless, and it moved its smooth pink head as if it was attempting to smell the air. But from my vantage point, I couldn't tell if the monster even had nostrils or not. Its legs tapped spastically on the ground as it sniffed, and I ordered the pyreworm to freeze. I wasn't sure what the skinless monster was capable of sense-wise, and I didn't want to risk upsetting the entire herd before I could reach the Enclave. So my summon stopped in midair, but I felt a tug through our bond. The pyreworm was ready to fight, no matter the cost. It hated this horde of monsters that threatened its master, and while I appreciated the loyalty of the serpentine creature, I needed to put more space between us and them. "Take us up higher, but do it slowly," I commanded the pyreworm. The skinless monster below us was enormous and frenetic, but it didn't have the flight advantage of the pyreworm, so the best course of action would be to avoid the thing altogether. My summons followed my command and took us higher, about 100 or more feet into the air, and the skinless monster's head swerved while its body tensed as it tried to locate us. I studied the creature carefully as the pyreworm flew up, and I prepared myself for the possibility of an attack. Thankfully, the skinless being relaxed its stance, so my theory had been correct. It couldn't spot us in the air. When the creature finally skittered forward to rejoin the herd, I let out a sigh of relief, and the pyreworm tensed its talons. That had been far too close of a call. I wondered how the skinless creature navigated the terrain without sight or sound, but then again, the pyreworm lacked sight as well. So perhaps it was akin to moles, and sensed the vibrations of the ground. I made note of that, and vowed to bring it up to Sleet once I saw him, since flight might prove to be a powerful advantage against the enormous monster. Now that there was proper distance between the herd and me, I urged the pyreworm to resume the route to the Enclave. We soared through the air, and within half an hour or so, we were right outside of Arlay. The pyre worm gave a powerful flap of its shadowy wings, and then propelled itself forward in one fluid motion, until we were nearly vertical, and I clung to the monster for dear life as we ascended parallel to the brilliant orange walls of the enclave. Adrenaline swept through me until it reached my head, and the effect was dizzying, but exhilarating. So I let out a whoop of excitement. The pyre worm screeched out a battle cry to echo mine, and together in that moment, the monster and I felt unstoppable. Soon, the pointed marble towers of the academy drew nearer, and as my eyes followed the upward slope of the spires, I spied more than a dozen airships as they revved up and began to take off. The military. Kennefic had been able to warn them after all. Finally, the pyreworm breached the walls, and its serpentine body tilted down in a horizontal position as we glided over the orange fortress. So I relaxed my hold on the monster and gave it an affectionate pat. "Great job, friend," I thanked the pyreworm, and the faceless creature let out a soft cry in response. The pyreworm hovered in place, and I peered around at the airships. The sheer number of crafts was impressive, but I wondered just how effective they would be against the herd of giant monsters. The Vincrimsel and Sycorot had been no joke, but we'd had the advantage of them being separate. The creatures outside of the Enclave were united somehow, and posed an even bigger threat, and I prayed to the Maker that our forces were great enough to properly defend Varlay with as few casualties as possible. But I couldn't afford to wait around any longer and psych myself out with what-ifs. It was time to take action and find Sleet and Galahar. "Take me to the academy," I commanded the pyreworm. The monster let out another chilling battle screech, allowed me a moment to rebrace myself against it, and then dipped down and flew toward the academy with lightning speed. The citizens of Arlay rushed around beneath us, and I noted a mix of robed mages, greened uniformed soldiers, and scared civilians as they scurried about to their destinations. The whole enclave was teeming with sound and activity, from the slums at the base of the hill to the richer housing near the top, and I said a quick prayer to the Maker to protect the people of Arlay. I wasn't an overly religious man, but any help I could get, divine or otherwise, was appreciated. The pyreworm breezed up the hill to the academy, and as we descended, I caught a glimpse of my mansion. I briefly debated whether or not to stop by, but I trusted my women knew what to do. They were all capable warriors, and knew how to handle themselves in crises, and it was imperative I reached Sleet and Galahar as soon as possible. Soon we cleared the green sloping landscape, and the snow-white walls of the academy loomed before us. The marble reflected the moon afternoon sunlight, and I squinted to keep from being blinded. I commanded my pyreworm to land, and once my feet touched the ground, I recalled the monster, replaced the crystal in my bandolier, and took off into a sprint across the grounds and into the building. The academy was just as frantic as the rest of the enclave, and as I raced through the corridor, I got swept up in the ebb and flow of my peers and the fellow faculty members who'd remained here for winter break. Eventually, I broke through, and then I stopped in my tracks when I recognized a familiar face amongst the crowd.
"Griff!"
Nia called out to me.
"You're okay!"
The ashen-haired elementalist ran at me and threw herself into my arms, and I grasped my wife tightly, spun her around, and kissed her like it was our wedding night. Nia's full lips were feverish as they pressed against mine, and soon the taste of salt reached my tongue, and I opened my eyes to see the tears that streamed down her cheeks. "Don't cry," I urged Nia as I cupped her face and wiped the wetness away with my thumbs. Some droplets still clung from her eyelashes, and her pale blue eyes were crystalline as she looked into mine. "I'm here. I'm okay."
"I could kill you, farm boy."
My wife quivered as she rested her head on my shoulder.
"I know you do your hero stuff all the time, But don't you dare run off on me again!
I promise you, Nia Kennefic, I will never leave your side again, I vowed to her, and I kissed the top of her head. That is, unless we're amidst battle, which is why I'm here. The herd,
They're here.
Nia straightened up and nodded, and her silver blonde hair flared around her.
You were right, of course. We should have tried to attack these creatures sooner, and now they are attacking us. My father, Sleet, and I were preparing to head down there now. They're waiting for me out on the grounds.
Where are the others? I asked as I looked around the corridor, but I couldn't spy my teammates in the thrall of frantic academy faculty and students.
They're around here somewhere. That's all I know.
Nia shook her head frantically.
Everyone was scattered between home and the academy when the alarms rang out. The only person aside from you I ran into was Brayden, and I sent him to the mansion to check in on Syra and Freya. They're the only two I haven't seen today.
Thank the Maker for Brayden, I said. Hopefully everyone is staying safe. Suddenly, a devastating roar rang through the air, and my heart began to pound in my chest. The time for affection was at an end.
We have to go,
Nia urged, and the ashen-haired elementalist's eyes grew sharp and focused as she peered into the distance. While they were still a good ways from the Enclave, I knew if the herd continued their steady pace, they would soon reach the walls. So I grasped my wife's hand, and together we ran down the corridor and out the back doors. We sped down the grounds as quickly as our feet could carry us, and we did our best to keep from plowing through the groups of people headed in the same direction. A cluster of people, mages and soldiers alike, were gathered around a platform. From where I stood, I couldn't see the figure at the head of the crowd, but their identity was revealed almost immediately.
It's all hands on deck,
I heard Galahar Kennefic call out. His deep voice was enhanced by a speaker as he addressed the group, and the sentiment was met with thunderous applause. We seemed to have arrived just in time to catch the end of the Grand Mage's speech. Nia and I wove our way through the mess of people, much to the irritation of a few mages, and once we neared the front, the Grand Mage spotted us immediately.
Griff!
Galahar shouted, and his hands wildly gestured to me. My father-in-law's icy blue eyes were as clear as Nia's, with the same concentration and focus my wife applied to nearly every battle situation. We joined the Grand Mage at his post in front of the crowd, and once Galahar stepped away from the speaker, he affectionately slapped me on the back.
Good to see you, son,
the distinguished mage said earnestly.
I was hoping you would be back in time to help. I'm sorry I didn't take the threat as seriously as I should have. You were right, Griff. But regardless, the enemy is here, and we have a duty to our people to keep them safe, no matter what.
Yes, we do, I nodded.
Where is the headmaster?
Nia wondered as she looked around at the crowd of people. I was wondering the same, I added in. I wanted to touch base with Headmaster Sleep before we headed out to the field, clear the air, apologize for my attitude.
We spoke for a long while once you left the office, and we agreed with some of your proposals, Griff,
Galahar stated with a reassuring gaze.
You brought up valid points about the capable mages of the Academy, so Sleet is rounding up some of your peers to assist with this effort, with the exception of the first years. The younger, more inexperienced students have been sent to the slums and housing districts to assist the non-magic users of Valet to get to safety.
That's a great compromise, I told the Grand Mage. The more help we can get, the better. And getting the first years involved in the process without forcing them into an unknown situation is a smart move.
Definitely,
Nia agreed simply with an elegant nod of her head. We shared a smile, and then I straightened up and addressed my father-in-law. So what's the plan, sir? I asked.
Push the monsters as far away from the Enclave as possible, Galahar began. The further we can push back the herd, the less of a chance they'll have to knock down our walls.
Do you think they can overcome the Xanyar Stone? I wondered as my eyebrows crinkled together. I know they have brute strength and size on their side, but do you think that's enough?
With how powerful the Vincremza and Sycorot were, there's a distinct chance they could,
Nia noted.
I know it isn't something we would even want to imagine, but...
We have to be prepared for any eventuality,
Galahar interrupted her somberly, and his mouth was a hard, thin line as he stared out at the walls.
Vale has been lucky enough to have never experienced an attack of this magnitude, and I don't wish for this enclave to become another Heartmire.
Both Kinefic's eyes lowered at the sentiment, and I knew their minds had fallen to Napoli, Galahar's son and Nia's older brother, who had perished in the Battle of Heartmire. That fight had deeply impacted their family, and I knew it still stung for them to bring it up. I owed it to my wife and father-in-law to never let that happen again. So, we push the herd further into the field away from Varley, surround them, and come at them with everything we've got? I spoke up in an effort to move their thoughts away from their trauma. Am I understanding that correctly?
The plan is admittedly a little crude, but we don't have the time to concoct something more elaborate,
Galahar sighed. And then he addressed me directly.
Griff, I'm really going to need some of those monsters and Arkans you have in your arsenal. Something tells me we will need to exercise any advantage possible, and your summons are particularly powerful assets.
Whatever you require, sir, I saluted, and my father-in-law smirked.
Enough of that, son,
he laughed, and then he turns to his daughter.
Nia. You will join Headmaster Sleet and I. We will lead the troops from the front of the Enclave, while Griff distracts the herd from behind. They won't be able to resist fighting other monsters, and while they focus on Griff and his summons, we can sneak up on them and push back with elemental magic.
My mind spiraled as I tried to visualize how this would work, but if this fight was like any of the others I'd been involved with, it would be best to just roll with the punches. Just then, another cacophony of deafening screeches rang out, and the crowd froze for a moment as they absorbed the terrifying sound.
It's time,
Galahar proclaimed, and the Grand Mage's ice-blue eyes fixed on me intensely.
We need to get out to the field before they get too much further.
Varley will not fall, I declared as I lifted my chin. I promise.
I'll see you out there, Griff.
He rested a strong hand on my back.
Good luck.
You too, sir, I said, and then the Grand Mage strode off down the grounds. Once Galahar disappeared, I pulled Nia in for a long, tender kiss, and this one had similar energy to our kiss earlier, but there was a different type of urgency about it. This one said, you'd better come back to me in one piece. I love you, Nia Kinefic. I whispered to my wife, and I rested my forehead briefly against hers.
I love you too, Griff, she murmured.
We wordlessly remained there for a moment, and let the world around us vanish. And then, after one more quick embrace, we parted ways. As I walked away from the Kinefics and buried my pre-battle anxiety, I caught a sight of a feminine fair-skinned arm in the air as it waved in my direction. I squinted at it, and excitement filled me as I located its owner.
Griff!
Aaron cried out from yards away.
You've made it back to us! I knew you would!
My grin grew from ear to ear, and I sprinted across the grounds to catch up to the orange-haired mimic. About halfway there, I noticed the pilot wasn't alone. Gawain stood behind her, outfitted in the red-trimmed golden robes that noted his rank as a fire elementalist. And his emerald eyes lit up when he saw me.
Make us, summoner! Don't scare us like that again!
Gawain chided as I reached the pair, and then the golden-haired mage gave me a one-armed hug.
Whenever you have to go do something stupid like trying to die to save the world, bring us along, eh?
I happily returned the gesture, only with both arms, and embraced my friend warmly. I won't leave you all behind again, I promised him with a smile. It seems like every time I go off on my own, I miss out on all the exciting stuff.
Yeah, thanks for bringing all the fun back with you,
Aaron snorted. And then the mimic attacked me with a hug and a dramatic kiss on the cheek. Her lips left a sticky mark on my face, but I couldn't be bothered to wipe it off, since I was too happy to be reunited with my lover. Thought you guys could use some excitement, I grinned.
We all should have listened to you and attacked them first, Aaron sighed with a roll of her amber eyes. It's hard not to argue with the old guys, though. I'm sorry for not taking your side.
Nothing to apologize for, I said, and then I looked around the crowded grounds. Have you guys seen Varlith, Orin, and Layla?
They're just over there.
Aaron pointed in the distance, and sure enough, I spotted the surly banisher, the metalog, and the brunette mage. The three stood beside each other with Layla atop her hippocrans, Orin to the right of her, and Varlith on the left. And the mages all wore similarly serious expressions as they looked on toward the walls. Excellent, I breathed a sigh of relief. Aside from my two pregnant lovers who were being looked after by Brayden, and the researchers, who were still maker knows where, all of my friends and lovers were accounted for.
Grand Mage Kennefic tried to pair us off as best as possible,
Aaron explained.
He thought scattering us amongst the soldiers and more inexperienced mages would help the army out. It's not a bad plan by any means, Gawain added. Though getting saddled with Lindblum is almost scarier than those monsters.
Aaron playfully swatted Gawain in the arm, but then her expression grew serious.
How bad do you think it's going to be?
The pilot wondered quietly as she stared up at the orange walls. Pretty bad, I admitted. I easily could have lied to the mimic, but it wouldn't have benefited either of us to do so.
Says you, Gawain scoffed. But when was the last time Aaron, Griff, and Gawain lost a fight? Fucking never. And I'm certainly ready to kick some monster ass.
The fire mage jutted his chest out and shot Aaron and me a cocky grin, and we burst out into laughter. Genuine laughter that reached deep within me. I'm glad you're so excited, Maddox, I chuckled. But I'll have you know, I'm equally as stoked to destroy some mega monsters.
You two are crazy,
Aaron giggled as she looked between Gawain and me. The fire mage and I shared a sideways glance at her, and then I winked at my orange-haired lover. Speaking of, I began, but Aaron cut me off with a smile.
Make sure we win,
the pilot urged me softly, and her tone was more serious than it had been just moments ago. Damn right, I said, and after exchanging nonverbal goodbyes with my friend and lover, I strode in the opposite direction of the crowd. If I were going to surprise the herd, I would need to take to the skies and approach them from a different angle than the rest of our army. So I reached into my bandolier and retrieved the pale blue winged-shaped essence crystal of my Vinghund. Then I crushed it on the ground, and my canine-like summons appeared before me. She lolled her head to the side and panted, and the gesture would have made her look like a puppy if it weren't for her impressive horns. I approached my monster and scratched her behind the ears. Are you ready to fight, girl? I asked as the Vinghund's back leg thumped. My summons barked at a reply, and then she squatted down so I could hop aboard. I mounted the canine monster and retrieved two more crystals, the ever-reliable speed slug and bullet bass. Then I equipped the Vinghund with the summons, and soon the canine-like monster was coated in chrome armor. Finally, she stretched out her wings, and a low growl escaped from her. Let's do this, I grinned, and after a running leap, the Vinghund took to the sky. The traffic above Varlay was thicker than it had been upon my entry, and we dodged a good number of airships as they departed the enclave. The Vinghund yipped when he nearly grazed by one of the crafts, and my heart skipped a beat. Don't get too sassy, I cried out to my summons, and I commanded her to veer to the left. The monster obliged and steered us away from the crafts, and as we flew upward, I couldn't help but wonder how many of those airships would end up returning home. How many people I knew, people I'd passed hundreds of times a day but never conversed with. But I forced myself to shake those negative sentiments from my head. The pilots and soldiers in those crafts were more than capable of handling themselves. The Academy didn't allow its students to slack off, and any who did wouldn't have gone on to serve in the military. With one final push of her pale blue wings, the Vinghund breached the walls, and as we soared over the emerald green field outside the enclave, I kept my eyes peeled for the herd. If the sounds had been any indication, the herd was almost upon us. Sure enough, a few minutes later, I spied a huge cloud of dust and smoke as it headed right toward us. My chrome-coated summon stiffened, and I gave her a reassuring pat on the top of her head. The Vinghund seemed unsettled by the horde of enormous monsters. Not that I could blame her. "Easy, girl," I soothed her. "Just focus on getting us past them." The Vinghund let out a yip and picked up her pace, as if she were determined to fly as far away from the mass as possible. Then she ascended higher to put more space between us and the herd, which allowed me a moment to think. I needed to focus on battle strategy and summon something big to attract the herd once I made it to the field. Something powerful that would entice them to attack. So I considered my options. There was the Belial, my sun giant, my Baroker.
"Don't forget about us," Sarah whispered in my head.
The Arkans and their summons would definitely be of benefit to me.
"You need something big?" Fi added cheekily. "Perhaps I can be of assistance."
"I don't like the sound of that," I admitted to the winged Arkan, and I could practically feel her eye roll through my consciousness.
"It was a poor joke, but the punchline was serious. I can be of assistance, Master."
While sending out an Arkan was a bold first move, it would easily get the herd's attention long enough for the army to assemble outside of the enclave for their initial push. "Let's see what you've got," I gave in, and within seconds, the skin on my chest began to tingle as the white wing tattoos slithered from my body. Then Fi appeared midair and unfurled her plush white wings just in time to steady herself. The Arkan gave me a wicked smile, blew me a kiss, and then flew with great speed to the tail end of the herd. I watched as she daintily landed on the field, and once her feet hit the ground, the goddess began to grow rapidly. Her pale white-blue arms stretched out in front of her, which made the gold chains that wrapped around her expanding body rattle. And within moments, she was just as large as the monsters in front of her. Finally, Fi shook out her long white hair behind her, and sunlight reflected off the broken halo above her head.
"Bow before me, pathetic creatures!"
the angelic Arkan bellowed to the herd in a booming voice that echoed through the field.
"Admit defeat while you still can!"
Only a few monsters halted in place, which evidently wasn't a satisfactory response to Fi. So she lifted her massive foot and stomped down on the field. The ground wavered enough to catch the rest of the herd's attention, and Fi's face lit up as they began to move toward her.
"Yes, foolish ones! Come to me!"
she taunted the monsters.
"Let me show you what true power looks like!"
The Vinghund and I froze in place as we watched the encounter unfold, and the winged Arkan moved one of her legs back and used it to brace herself for the onslaught of monsters. The first creature to slam into the winged goddess resembled a blonde-furred bear, and it raised its claws up menacingly in an attempt to get Fi's eyes, but the Arkan grasped onto its paws before it could get the chance.
"No, no, no!"
her voice echoed, and with the flex of her arm's muscles, she picked up the monster and tossed it away from her like it was nothing. I let out a low whistle as the blonde bear thudded to the ground. "That looked painful," I remarked to the Vinghund, and my summons tilted her head at the spectacle.
"Fi's never had patience for bearlings," Sarah spoke up. "Even in smaller incarnations, she's never liked them."
"Good to know," I smirked as I watched Fi wipe her bloodied hands on her thighs, and the giant Arkin grinned widely as the rest of the herd prepared to come at her. Then I noticed movement from the opposite end of the field, and to my relief, I watched our army finally arrive. They marched in with purpose, and while I couldn't single anyone out from my vantage point in the sky, I knew Nia and her father were at the head of the group, and with them in charge, the military was in great hands. The Kenefic family were well known throughout Mistral, and I had a feeling the events of the day would lend the family even greater prestige. So, as much as I wanted to keep an eye on the troops, I trusted the Kenefics had it under control, and I refocused on my summoned Arkin. Then I commanded the Vinghunt to take us over to where Fi grappled with another huge monster. The Arkin was caught up in the hair-like membranes of a green-gray millipede, and her face was wrinkled in disgust.
"Ew!"
she drawled as the monster writhed against her, and she struggled to pull the creature off her body.
"Disgusting pest! Get off me!"
Her fingers grasped at the gross insect, and finally managed to pull it off her. Once she flung the insect creature to the ground, she jumped up into the air above it, pumped her white wings to take her higher, and once she was at her desired altitude, she dropped her wings to the side and fell on top of the millipede. The bug-like monster let out a long, high-pitched shriek as Fi crushed it into the ground, and then its body exploded with a splatter of bright green goo. While I admired Fi's strategy, the field had buckled like an angry horse under her weight, and I caught sight of a soldier being flung up into the air by the Arkin. So I dug my heels into the Vinghund, and my canine-like summons veered over to the man just in time to sweep him up.
"Thank the Maker," the soldier proclaimed in a shaky voice, but his eyes were still on Fi's hands. "I thought I was done for."
"Not today," I stated, and then the Vinghund flew far away from the winged Arkin. We dropped the soldier off near the tree line that flanked the field, and the appreciative man gave us a gracious thank you before returning to the battle. I stood off to the side for a moment and considered what to do. While Fi was certainly helpful at that size, her earth-shaking footsteps and carelessness were causing the fields to quake, and several of our soldiers struggled to remain upright. She was distracting the herd, but paid no mind to the army she was supposed to be assisting. So I did the only logical thing I could, and recalled the Arkin. The winged goddess was reluctant to return, but she had to follow my commands. She shrank back down to her normal height, and then dissipated into a thin white mist, and settled back into the tattoos on my chest.
"Boo!"
she pouted once she was safely back inside my mind.
"I was just starting to have fun."
"Sorry, Fi," I apologized, though the remark wasn't nearly as sincere as I pretended it to be. While the Arkin grumbled in my consciousness, I noticed an auburn blur in the distance, and I commanded the Vinghund to return to it. Sure enough, it was Layla atop her Hippocrans, and she, Varlith, and Orin were in the midst of fending off another gray-green millipede creature, and I shuddered as I took in its freaky legs. Once I reached my friends, I jumped off the Vinghund, thanked her, and then recalled her to her essence crystal, along with the bullet bass. Once the crystals were stashed away in their respective places, I then summoned one of my other favorite monsters. The Rusa appeared in a burst of smoke, and unfurled its wicked-looking stinger as it eyed the millipede. Layla hadn't seen me yet, but the Rusa was hard to miss, and as the petite summoner and our male friends knocked down the millipede, she noticed the scorpion monster and waved over at me. Her excitement waned instantly, however, and her hazel eyes grew round with fear.
"Griffy, behind you!"
Layla called out, and I turned just in time to see a purple mass as it headed in my direction. So I commanded my Rusa to turn away from the millipede and help me fend off the incoming next enemy. It was a lizard-like monster, and it scurried toward me and my Rusa much faster than I was prepared for. In the bright sunlight, its multicolored scales glittered like amethyst and garnet. And it would have been a beautiful sight
if they weren't covering an enormous reptile hell-bent on killing us.
The creature's forked violet tongue flicked out from behind its pointed fangs, and Myrusa reflexively twitched its pincer as it stared the lizard monster down. My heart raced as the two monsters sized each other up. I wasn't sure who was going to make the next move, but based off the creature's body language, I could tell this fight was going to be intense.
The lizard struck first, and its tongue lashed out toward us, but the Rusa and I managed to dodge it before it could strike us down. Then the Rusa twitched excitedly in front of me, and I could feel it was ready for a fight.
"Steady," I urged my monster. "We can't get too cocky here."
The lizard monster must have sensed the Rusa's fearlessness and let out an intimidating screech, but my scorpion summons was unfazed by the battle cry and retracted its stinger. The Rusa stood idle for a moment and waited for the opportune moment to strike. Then the enormous lizard's purple tongue shot out again, and right as it did, I commanded the Rusa to strike.
"Do it now!"
I yelled, and the scorpion monster's deadly stinger pricked the monster's tongue before it could reach us. The violet creature shrieked and twitched in pain and tried to retract its tongue, but it wouldn't return to its fanged mouth. The paralyzed appendage piled limply in front of the beast, and the lizard grew more distressed by the moment. Without the use of its tongue, the lizard's only remaining advantage was its stature, and the creature's tremendous height seems to affect how quickly Myrusa's poison took hold. So we needed to go another round for it to be effective.
"Strike again," I commanded my summons with a wave of my will. "Aim for the neck this time."
The Rusa happily twitched, and then the scorpion monster delivered another sting to the violet lizard's vulnerable neck. This time, the monster was paralyzed instantly, and the reptilian creature let out a death rattle before collapsing to the ground. The earth shook from the impact, and I braced myself against the Rusa's dark exoskeleton. Then the monster dissipated right before my eyes. I let out a victory whoop and grinned at Myrusa.
"Fuck yes, buddy! We did it!"
"Hell yeah! That was awesome!"
Layla exclaimed, and the petite summoner, sans Hippocrans, raced over to high-five me. We slapped palms and Layla's wide hazel eyes were bright with excitement, but our enthusiasm was premature, and another piercing monster cry split the air as the ground shook beneath us.
"Shit!"
I gasped as I spun to face the noise. Now that the lizard was subdued, we had a new challenger, and this one was particularly gnarly-looking. Not to be outdone by the violet-scaled monster, this creature was a being made of pure metal. It appeared reptilian in nature, and sort of resembled a turtle with an enormous steel shell that rose high into the air, and an equally metallic four-legged body underneath. A pair of pure white eyes glared at us over its snapping maw, and the creature let out a trilling screech as it stomped toward us.
"Let's go!"
I yelled as I reached out for Layla, and I gripped the petite mage's arm and pulled her out of harm's way before the enormous monster could step on us. The Rusa followed suit, and once we were clear of the metal turtle, the scorpion monster eyed me expectantly, like it was ready to go again.
"I'm not sure if that's a great idea," I addressed my summons. "Your stinger might not work up against metal."
The scorpion lowered its stinger, and I sent a wave of gratitude to the creature and thanked it for all of its support. Then I recalled my summons, and as I stashed the essence crystal back into my bandolier, I glanced over at Layla, who had an odd smile on her face.
"Bethel?"
I asked with a frown.
"What's going on in that head of yours?"
The pretty summoner grinned even wider at me.
"I have an idea, but it might be a little crazy."
"Can't be any crazier than anything else we've witnessed today,"
I smirked, but the expression vanished as the steel turtle bellowed again.
"We'll need your spruce boar, my ketchum, and..."
She paused and craned her neck as she looked around the field. Then she seemed to have found what she was looking for, and waved at a mage off in the distance. The woman was distracted by a monster nearby and didn't reply. So Layla attempted again to get her attention.
Nella!
Layla shouted, and the golden-robed mage finally glanced over. She inclined her head to signal Layla before she sprinted over to us, and her blue-black hair streamed behind her.
Bethel!
The mage panted out of breath, and then she wiped her sweat-slicked forehead with the sleeve of her blue-trimmed robe. The second I spied the trim, I knew exactly what Layla had in mind.
Griff, this is Melakal, a third-year water mage.
Layla introduced us, and Mela shot me a pretty smile before she focused her gaze on the metal turtle.
Mika, that thing is freaky,
Mela quipped, and her almond-shaped eyes widened. Layla placed a hand on the water mage's shoulder.
It is, but I may have an idea how to take it down.
Spill it, Layla. I'm all ears,
Mela said with a raised eyebrow, and I wondered how the two knew each other.
We're in need of some water magic, Layla explained.
Well then, I'm your girl,
Mela laughed, and she gestured at the river nearby.
We just need to lure that thing over to the stream. As much as I wish I could pull water out of thin air, I can't, so we need to be near a body of it for this to work.
Perfect,
Layla smirked, and then the brunette mage peered out into the field. I followed her look all the way to the tree line that edged the field, and right in front of the looming trees was a flowing stream.
Found our source, I noted. Let's get over there.
So Mela, Layla, and I waved our hands in the air to attract the turtle's attention, and once we did, we took off in a sprint toward the stream. The turtle let out a bellow as it stomped after us, and the adrenaline rush I experienced made me dizzy with anticipation. We stopped just short of the stream, and Mela manipulated the water from it with a twist of her hand. Then she thrust out her arms, rerouted the liquid, and used it to flood the ground in front of us. The metal turtle let out a confused cry as the water covered its feet, and its white eyes glared at us with annoyance. Then, to my surprise, the turtle's legs began to turn orange as rust rapidly crept up the surface of it.
Didn't expect that,
Mela remarked with a nervous laugh.
Should I try to cover it?
Not yet, Layla instructed. The rust on its legs will keep it distracted for now, but I need the dome to conduct properly for this maneuver to work.
You're going to light up the whole place,
Mela said in awe as she eyed the turtle, who was frozen in place.
You have a monster that creates electricity?
Yep, Layla nodded. Griffey's spruce boar conducts electricity as an attack, and this turtle thing seems to have a similar structure to it. And since the turtle doesn't seem to have many other moves aside from being a big-ass metal guy,
it'll conduct the electricity amplified by the spruce boar and fire it elsewhere, I finished.
We need to get the other mages away,
Mela said with a worried frown.
Otherwise, they risk electrocution.
Send out another burst of water and then try to warn the others as we prepare our monsters, I instructed the water mage. And the woman nodded before she sent another wave of dark water onto the ground. The turtle's white eyes glared daggers at us as the rust completely took over its feet. And while I hadn't anticipated that happening, I thanked the maker for the unexpected advantage against the enormous monster.
Everyone step back!
Layla called out to no one in particular. And then she turned to me.
And Griffey, ready the spruce boar. If this goes according to plan, things are about to get a little wild.
Got it,
I nodded, and the petite summoner called her familiar forward as I summoned the spruce boar. The large creature was an odd one I'd picked up in my travels to the southern continent, and it resembled a beetle with a metallic tree atop its exoskeleton. While it couldn't create its own electricity, it sure could channel it from elsewhere, and if we could pull this off, the results would be awesome. A few moments later, the spruce boar ambled in front of me, and Layla's ketchum shivered in the air above us. All of our players were in position, and it was time to strike. The turtle bellowed at its new opponents, but our monsters were unfazed as they stared down the metallic monster.
Now!
Layla commanded her familiar, and without hesitation, the ketchum unleashed a blast of electricity, which funneled through the spruce bore. My summons gathered up all of the energy from Layla's bat familiar, and I could feel my mana waver at the effort. Once my monster was at total energy capacity, it was time to strike.
"Do it!"
I ordered, and the spruce boar let loose a wall of electricity that lit up the battlefield the moment it struck the water on the ground ahead of us. The metal turtle went up in sparks and cried out as the lightning crackled over the surface of its steely body. And, just as Layla had predicted, energy reflected off the dome and shot outwards into the field. Streams of lightning struck out like vines at a pair of the mega monsters nearby, and the enormous creatures let out ear-piercing bellows as they caught ablaze. The ground shook as they collapsed, and the turtle screamed out for its fallen herd mates. The lightning around the turtle crackled a bit, and the metallic monster hit the ground with a thud. Soon, it was nothing but a pile of disintegrated debris. Another one down. We were actually making progress on this herd. As I looked around, I was pleasantly surprised to see Galahar's plan to separate the monsters from each other was going smoothly. Together, their threat was immense. But individually, they were simpler to handle. But apparently, I'd spoken too soon. The remaining monsters eyed their electrocuted brethren, and before our eyes, the creatures halted their battle sounds and inched closer together. Before, they'd seemed like a manageable threat, but as the herd became a solid unit, anxiety began to creep into my chest. What was once the individual pinpoints in the battlefield was now a seemingly impenetrable wall of enormous monsters.
"Maker!"
I cursed as I looked around at the herd. The symphony of guttural growls, snarls, and squawks began again, and then the monsters collectively began to move forward back toward the enclave. Then the monsters picked up their pace, and our army scattered throughout the field to avoid getting trampled by the mega-sized creatures. I stared in disbelief. If we didn't do something quick, we would be absolutely fucked.
"Everyone fall back!"
A feminine voice suddenly cried out, and we all turned to see Nia, Sleet, and Galahar. The trio of mages stood in a straight line, and even from my place near the stream, I could feel the raw energy that rippled around them. The rest of our army could sense it too, because all who remained followed Nia's order. Green-uniformed soldiers fell into ordered lines, and they all turned to face the elementalist, headmaster, and grand mage in unison. I watched my wife intently as the temperature of the air plummeted. Her silver blonde hair floated around her like sentient moonlight, and her brilliant blue eyes grew darker. The sky around us grew dark and muted, and where there had been no shade or blockages before, there were now wicked black storm clouds that clamored and flashed with thunder and lightning. As the coming storm grew in intensity, the whites of Nia's eyes flooded black, and my heart dropped in my chest. She was going to unleash another insane attack, and I prayed this time it wouldn't hurt her as badly as the last.
"Micah, look at Sleet!"
Layla whispered beside me. Headmaster Sleet, the wise old man who smoked tobacco at his desk and offered sage advice, academic rewards, and vague mission assignments, was no more. That man existed in the confines of the academy. This man beside my wife was Meringer Sleet, the renowned storm mage who was idolized throughout Mistral for his legendary skills of elemental magic, and he was here to deliver a powerful blow to an undefeatable horde. Similarly, Galahar Kinefic exuded power even in stillness. With his chin raised and his shoulders squared, he embodied the role of an untouchable leader, the kind of man who'd never accepted defeat, even in the most dire of circumstances. And the Grand Mage's blue eyes took on an icy cast as he stared up at the storm clouds. The wind circled around them, and as the gale kicked up, it attracted errant branches and leaves from nearby trees, as well as dust and debris from the fallen monsters. "Wow," I breathed as I looked at the herd of monsters. The creatures were frozen in place, immobilized by the sudden shift in weather, and I had a sneaking suspicion
Things were about to get crazy. Just as I had the thought, the three most renowned mages of our time let out a collective war cry of anger that echoed throughout the battlefield. And right along with it came the greatest surge of elemental magic I'd ever seen.